These words from the first chapter, from the first verse of R. Kelly's Ignition remix. No, I'm not trying to be rude, but hey, pretty girl, I'm feeling you. The way you do the things you do. Remind me of my Lexus coupe. That's why I'm all up in yo grill, trying to get you to a hotel. You must be a football coach, the way you got me playing the field. I wonder if he knows he's quoting the Temptations when he writes, the way you do the things you do. Perhaps some of you saw Jimmy Fallon in his first week as host of The Tonight Show doing this very same song in the form of a barbershop quartet. If you haven't, it's on YouTube, and I refer to it, you to it, because it's hilarious. It's absurd, but also in a funny way, respectful. It reminds me of the original Saturday Night Live crew back in the 70s, all dressed in matching Argyle sweaters, singing Ray Charles' famous song as, "Hey, hey, what did I say?" And that reminds me of going back even farther when Steve Allen was the host of The Tonight Show, when he recited the famous lyrics that go something like this. Sha-na-na-na, sha-na-na-na-na, sha-na-na-na, get a job. So this is what I feel like a little bit when I do a sermon with the title, Dem Bones. Is it racist or cultural theft for me to do so? Certainly one of the great traditions of musical history is the ripoff and exploitation of black musicians for their royalties and their creativity. But should I then call the sermon Them Bones, or perhaps Those Bones? That doesn't seem right either. I first came across the song Dem Bones when I was a little kid in the form of a scary black and white cartoon of rattling skeletons singing the words to Dem Bones. I just knew it was fun. I had no way of knowing at the time that it was way more than an anatomy lesson, that it actually has something to do with hearing the word of the Lord. Can't you see the work of the Lord? It goes back to the days of slavery, which in turn reference the days of the prophet Ezekiel. Now, Ezekiel was an unusual prophet in that he was both a priest and a prophet. Usually you don't find both of those talents in the same person. To give you an example, I think there's every chance that we now have a pope who is both a priest and a prophet. The unusual quality that he's been bringing to his office combines the talents of prophecy and priesthood together. It doesn't happen very often. I don't think a prophet is somebody who foretells the future. It's somebody who clearly understands the present. And if you understand the present a little bit, you might have some idea of where you're going. Ezekiel lived during the time in the 7th century BC called the Babylonian captivity. And this was a time when the nation of Israel was divided and dispirited. There were still Jews in Israel, but they were oppressed and were at the mercy of an imperial power. And as much as 10% or more of the Jewish people at the time were imprisoned in Babylon. But they weren't imprisoned in terms of being in chains. They were imprisoned in the form of being kind of second-class citizens. They could have property, and they had a certain kind of freedom that they could, in fact, be a little comfortable with. But it was certainly a time when the nation was divided and dispirited. And so this is Ezekiel's prophecy. God calls Ezekiel, son of man. That's like saying today, hey, brother man. Hey, brother man, what's going on? It's also the words that were sometimes used to refer to Jesus as the Messiah, who was called Son of Man. Now, When the term dry bones is used, he's not referring to just ordinary bones, but something that is really, really dead. Dead for a long time, without hope. And what did God do? What was Ezekiel's prophesy? Well, he made those bones live again. First he put on the sinews, and then he breathed life into them. It takes more than bones. It takes muscle and blood. It takes spirit to live. It takes an invisible motive force. So what happens when the dry bones live again? They get up and they form a great army, and they are able to take over the nation again. So then the Lord says, now just as I made these dry bones live, I can breathe spirit back into the nation of Israel. I can make the nation of Israel, if they be faithful in me, to reunite again, to live again. And you know what? The prophecy was proven true. It wasn't overnight, but within 50, 60 years of the prophecy of Ezekiel, the Babylonian captivity was over, and the second temple was beginning to be built by Zerubbabel. So it worked. Those dry bones did live again. We did see the work of the Lord. So this is about God's special relationship to the nation of Israel and its people. Now, them bones, this example, has a special place in the black church. Because, you know, in the Bible, there's one verse in the New Testament about slaves obeying their masters, and a whole testament about a people gaining freedom. And I always thought one of the great errors that the slave masters did was allowing those slaves to have a Bible. This wonderful, whimsical song captures the hope of the people in slavery. It parallels the circumstances of African Americans, not only from the slave days, but in the days after slavery, when African Americans, though no longer in slavery, still were so oppressed and repressed and kept apart within society that a black preacher would naturally talk about the dry bones of our society. How do we make them live again when so often they found that community dispirited? How to raise up an army of hope. Now, I don't know if it's still true, but it used to be that black preachers had to have a really good sermon about them bones, much in the way a really good rock guitar player had to be able to play Johnny B. Goode. Now, the white churches often preach on this too, but their emphasis tends to be on the bone and not the breath. It's less about hope and more about guilt. It's about the dry bones of going through the motion of being a Christian, rather than having the spirit to really live out those values. Okay, so that's how the Jews and the black churches and the white churches interpret them bones. What about Unitarian Universalists? Well, we begin by explaining how everybody else does it. But then we take on our own special twist. We take a little bit of guilt from the white church, a little bit of hope from the black church, a little bit about reuniting a nation from the Jews. Now, some of us got so tired of going through the motions of being a Christian, we became Unitarian Universalists. So I understand that in this supposedly humanist church, here I am talking extensively about hearing the word of the Lord. We get this as a metaphor, right? And also get that in the book of Ezekiel, them bones was a metaphor, even to the people of Israel. That was the sermon that basically Ezekiel's preaching. He's saying to his people, now the Lord took me out to the valley and I saw these dry bones and they lived again, and you can live again too. Our nation can be reunited. Our nation can be brought back in a body and breath can come to it. That's his prophesize within his priesthood. And we didn't leave everything behind when we became Unitarian Universalists. For those of us who came out of the white churches, we have our own version of guilt. Now, to me, the Unitarian Universalist Valley of Dry Bones is a mile wide and an inch thick, because we often run the risk of becoming religious dabbling dilettantes. We're supposed to be all about individual growth and development here, but nobody's giving tests or grades. You can avoid personal growth in Unitarian Universalism just as you can in any church. You just have to turn away from the hard choices, say the right things, and keep your head down. And those right things to say are, to me, the driest bones in the Unitarian Universalist Valley. Now, keep in mind, the Unitarian Universalist trends can easily be prophesized. You take whatever was in vogue in organizational development 5 years ago, and it's the vogue in Unitarian Universalism today. Unitarian Universalists are too often chalice half-empty people. We've got to give more. We've got to be more active in the community. We've got to be more welcoming to everyone. We've got to be more diverse. We have to be more of what we are. Now, it's fine to strive beyond the present moment. It's essential. But you also have to, quoting the Staple Singers, respect yourself. You have to own who you are. We and all Unitarian Universalists do some terrific stuff, not only on Sunday, but the other days of the week. No matter how dysfunctional churches can get, and believe me, that's considerable, they still can deliver some really important things. A community on Sunday morning to see each other, to see how your dry bones are living right now. A way of getting together, a way of understanding that in this divided nation, we offer, and I do believe this, a hope for some kind of unification. And we keep that alive. Despite and sometimes because of the dysfunction that plagues our organizations, we do a lot of wonderful things. Now, you know what really breathes spirit into the dry bones of Unitarian Universalism? Getting over yourself and taking action. Leaving the dry bones of the past behind. If you are typecast in this congregation, consider acting against type. Had an interesting experience this week. In our apartment, there's a little sideboard that on the other side is the washer and dryer. And whenever I take the dry clothes out of the dryer, I fold them on the sideboard. But first, I have to take the picture of our stepdaughter down and the dog down. So there's room. And for the 6 years that I've been folding laundry on that side table, I always put the picture of the daughter on the left and the dog's on the right. And last week, for some strange reason, it just turned out, I put the picture of my daughter on the right and the dogs on the left. And suddenly it was like I was living in a whole new universe. Now, I don't think I'm OCD. My wife may have a different opinion. I think I have just enough of it to be orderly, thank you very much. But I was amazed at how much difference just to go by and to see the pictures on the other side. And you know what? There's a tremendous temptation for me to put them back. You know, and then I realized, no, there's nothing wrong. They can be on either side. It looks perfectly good. But it did, it got me out of the routine. It got me out of the rut. It got me just turned a little bit different. And it's more than I want to say. It seemed like a new day just because of that little difference that I made. So I encourage you, both in your life and in the way you relate to each other, you know, to rearrange the pictures a little bit, you know, to mix things up. If you've been down with RE for a long time, come up. If you haven't been down in RE since your kids were there, go down and volunteer for a semester. If you've been on the board forever, get off. If you've never been on, get on. There's new things that we can do. There's new things that we will do. Those dry bones will breathe again. Like the Jews, there is an exceedingly great army that Unitarian Universalists can gather, both nationally and in their own local communities. And like the Jews, we are about the reuniting of communities, large and small. We are about the nation fulfilling its historical hope and promise. And it's not because God thinks we're special, but because we think every person is special. In these days of seemingly endless division amongst our citizens, this remains my greatest hope for Unitarian Universalist bones, that we aid these dry American bones to go forward with the new spirit. As the Lord told Ezekiel, I will make them one nation. They shall no longer be divided. Can't you see these dry bones standing up again, breathing and living? Can't you hear the word of the Lord? May we join together in our closing hymn, which is 168.